Okay, I am calling to order the February, oh geez, the April 10th, 9th. It is the 10th. Yesterday was the 9th. Yeah, here we are, the April 10th, 2024 Planning Commission meeting. At this time, I will do a call of order and we'll start on the left.
Brian Lundgren here.
Cora Warfield here.
Ann Ellis here.
Ricky Dyson.
Ruth Ann Morris here.
Yeah, this is the man.
Okay, great. And do we have any visitors here?
I'll let you know if Jonathan checks in.
Okay, let us know. Thank you, Arlene.
Is there anybody on the on?
No,
I don't see anybody. Okay, so at this point, we will approve the February 14th, 2024 minutes as circulated. Okay. You're moving?
I'm moving.
Okay. Yeah. Are we seconding? And Brian is seconding. So, okay, the minutes are a motion by Ricky and Brian to approve the minutes from the February 14th meeting, 2024. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, they stand approved with the Jonathan not here. So, we are turning this over to a work session. It looks like I went over the handout, and I guess that's where we're at.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So there's a couple last month we were one short of a quorum, so a few of you might hear the same thing, but I did add a little bit of additional language and make a couple minor changes that we can go over. But we'll kind of run through each of the sections, and then I can answer questions as we go through all of the sections. And we're going to kind of, similar to how we've done other code updates, we'll kind of take it piece by piece. So at the next meeting, we'll kind of come with another section of the code with some text edits. So in the purpose section, this is some just, I'd say, really clarifying language in terms of the definition of a partition, its subdivision, and then we also define a serial partition here. So a partition, this is taking a parcel and dividing it into two or three lots, and that three is kind of the maximum. And once you do more than three, that's where you kind of cross the line into where you're a subdivision application, and those have stricter standards. But this is just kind of defining it in the purpose section. And then we've also added a serial partition. So this is...
That's new? Serial partition?
Serial partition, it's a common thing that's regulated in cities, because essentially what it's trying to prevent is someone just doing a bunch of partition applications instead of doing one big subdivision application. So if I had a large lot and then I divided it into three, and then two of those are smaller lots, but that rest of it, and then I came back 2 years later and then did another three and then came back. So the goal there is that you're not doing these serial partitions, rather it's evaluated all at once. It doesn't mean that all those lots would have to be built all at once, but you get it's in terms of review process with like the roads and everything, it's a lot cleaner and easier to review overall. So any questions kind of on the purpose section?
Yeah. So the idea of this is to prevent people from doing one piece and then next, and getting away with not making a subdivision out of it.
Yeah, in terms of the road standards, it's a lot easier to have that road built all at once. In terms of if you have, say, 20 lots, and then you're building that road for all of those lots all at once, instead of kind of going through the serial partition process. I'd say it's pretty common in codes to have similar language.
Partition, the serial partition is declared at the same time as a partition. In other words, as soon as it's large enough, it automatically becomes a serial partition.
Yeah, we would take a look at the partition to see, like, if it doesn't look like it could be feasibly divided again because of slopes or other conditions, then that would not be considered as a serial partition. But if it's set up where you kind of have an area where it's clear that that road could be extended and partitioned out further down the road. And that's, I mean, these are good questions to where maybe I can take a look at some other codes to make sure we.
I was just curious as to when it is implemented. Is it implemented at the beginning when they come in?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it would be implemented. So if they came in with a proposal and staff looked at it and we determined that it looks like it could be divided successfully in the future, and that's kind of what the intent looks like it is, then we would say you need to go through the subdivision process. But I think there could be a way where we actually add some specific standards and criteria in here, so it's clear, kind of
so
clear and objective of why.
So I'll try to explain what I understand. Not using minimum lot sizes in the city because they're way too small, but assume you've got a 5-acre minimum, right? And you have I can't come in and create 2 5-acre lots and keep 25 for myself, because we're going to presume that in the future I'm going to take that 25 and do another one, and maybe do another one after that. So it's saying that person should be treated as a subdivision.
Okay.
I think is what it's doing.
It makes sense. It's just I was wondering about when
that's a really good question. Well,
even if they say they wouldn't, you're still going to assume they would, right? I mean, that's always going to be an assumption.
I think so. Yeah, unless there's stuff like you said, if there's a bunch of wetlands, you can't develop on the 25 acres that are left, or something else, slope that clearly, cliff that clearly isn't going to be developed.
I think we can further define, I can work on defining that further within the code, so it is really clear when someone comes in or when we provide the code, when that would be triggered, or where there's exceptions, wetlands, slopes.
As a developer, I think I'd like serial partitions, because that's when, guys will come in and they'll take the old runway, the old Sweet Home Airport, and they'll put in a subdivision and they'll break it up into small tax lots all at once. And then all the tax bill will become due, and that's where they kind of lose their shirt.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hadn't really looked at this until we.
Yeah.
But I personally, as a developer, I think I'd like serial partitions.
So I think that your question is good, because if I had 25 acres, I just want to put a house on it. And is he forced to turn that into a subdivision?
No,
but I think it might be treated like a subdivision.
Oh, by whom? The city?
By the city.
If it's just, are you saying there's no, you're just putting one house on a lot, an existing lot?
That happens to be 25 acres.
That would just be a building.
Yeah, that would just be a building permit. But if you came in with a 25-acre lot and built two 10,000 square foot lots in the city, and left the rest of the 25 acres in your big portion, the city wants to be able to plan where the road's going to go for the future development.
It's kind of moot for us in Toledo, but it's still, the premise, whether it's 25 acres or
5 acres. I don't know that we've had any subdivisions.
Not recently, no.
Yeah, but the whole real thing is most places in Toledo are
the biggest lots are going to be like 2 acres or 3 acres.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there'll be a spot house, and then the rest of it's going to be timber conservation or wetland.
Or slope.
Yeah, or slope. And then you can, if you can break it off, then you, if it's TC ground, timber conservation, then you got to pay the back taxes on it to break anything off of it first off. And then it's got to be okayed by the city and the county and to break anything off of it. And then I've seen recently where the city's, you have to put sidewalks in and stuff and things like that. So if you're on a dead end street, you'll be the only sidewalk at the end of the street on the whole street that don't have sidewalk.
I wrote a document that we use as a city that's an irrevocable petition for public improvements. And it's basically you as the landowner, instead of requiring you to build the sidewalk now and the curb and gutter and do the development, you're not going to object to a petition for local improvement district. If the city does a local improvement district where the whole neighborhood has to pay for their share of the sidewalk, you're basically you and you're binding future owners that you're not going to object to that.
Well, like that, for instance, like Clark Loop, right, headed downtown, that's why they got a sidewalk there and ain't nobody else got a sidewalk.
And I don't know when Clark Loop was built, but
Clark Loop's been there.
Nothing.
With that sidewalk.
Long time.
So that's why they had to put that in. Yeah. So,
but they don't have to do that now.
Oh yeah.
No, they don't. No, he's saying they don't. They don't have to.
No, we make them sign an irrevocable petition for public improvements. We record it in the recorded documents, and you as the owner are binding yourself and any future owners that if a local improvement district is formed in your neighborhood, that you won't object to it. So a local improvement district is not raising taxes. It's the city basically taking out a loan, doing all the improvements, and you over time paying for them.
Oh.
So the local improvement district, you're saying that if one is formed, you in the future won't object to it. You're binding prior owners, subsequent owners, but we're not making you put in a sidewalk at that point in time.
So all I know is the information I received on about 10 years ago, I was looking at putting in a not subdividing because that's incorrect, breaking up 2.5 acres on a piece of property on a dead end road. And I was told I was going to have to put curbing and a sidewalk at the end of the road there for the...
if you're at a dead end and there's no sidewalk there now,
we won't run all the way. But
we won't make you do it now.
Well, hopefully, I'm glad that's what it is now. But at that time, I was going to put in a sidewalk, gravel road. It's unmaintained. And I own up into the last part of it, but I was going to have to build a sidewalk and curb and stuff like that.
Yeah, and
it was on my own property, but that was part of the requirements.
Yeah.
And I was I was so flabbergasted. Yeah. And so, I just couldn't, but anyways, yeah. So, I just don't want to be told if I'm going to be doing that again. I don't want, because it's 2.5 acres. Sure, I could say if I was to break it down into some of the minimum lots that have to be a subdivision for 2.5 acres. You could probably break it down to what's the minimum. We just went through the minimum, how many footage for a minimum. You could probably put, 8 properties on that. Would that be called a subdivision then?
Yeah, if there's 8 lots, that would be a subdivision.
If we went the minimum, then we'd have to call that a subdivision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and our current, we're not the partition versus subdivision, the 3 lots, that's in statute. So
the maximum I'd be able to do would be 3 lots, because mm-hmm. once you do a subdivision, we're talking massive money then. Versus,
yes.
A lot of money. I mean, you're talking engineering, and we're talking $750,000 right there into, you know, subdivision instantly. So
yeah,
versus it, just three houses, three lots is, we're talking, you know, $65,000. So versus $750,000. That's the difference between a sub between
it's four lots. A subdivision is four more.
Yeah, so
that, within a calendar year.
So that's the difference between a subdivision and between three lots and four lots.
It's about
$750,000.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with those.
It's between $750,000 and $65.
Yeah,
that's how much you're looking at. Big swing.
Yeah, that is a big difference.
That's why there's very few subdivisions here.
Yeah.
There's guys trying to do it there by the cemetery and cross road from it and so on. There's a lot of guys who want to do that here, but it's too expensive. That's why they don't do it here.
Too expensive here.
Yeah. Well, it's expensive everywhere.
Not so much, but here.
Okay, well, we need to move on to access.
I think that's interesting. Yeah, we'll do. We'll come back with some more like criteria in terms of what determines when it's a serial partition. Going back real quick to the sidewalks, you've seen it, I think, in a few partition applications. There's kind of the option of if you're within, we have to have Public Works review it, but within 500 feet, then there's the sidewalk requirement, and that's in our Public Works standards. We have that. But oftentimes, a lot of property owners have signed the irrevocable petition to do those sidewalks at a later time, but that'll run with the property. So that's kind of what's been done more frequently. I think if you're on a main thoroughfare right on adjacent to some existing sidewalks, then it makes sense to where we would require that you're extending the sidewalk and fixing that portion of your sidewalk that your frontage is on. But I think in a case where there's no sidewalks close, that's where signing the petition would be the route that the city's currently taking with the.
I don't want to belabor this again anymore, but I do have a question based on what you said, that the irrevocable document goes along with the property. So if the person who's putting in the serial partition sells those lots, then does that mean that that document goes with that property, and then the purchaser is the one that's going to be responsible for putting money into that sidewalk?
Historically, I think where we've used the irrevocable petition for public improvements is one development at a time, right? We haven't used that in a subdivision or even in a partition that I'm aware of. It's been onesies, but
that makes more sense if it's
if
it's just onesies. I was just kind of, as I was listening to you,
yeah,
I thought it takes it all out of the owners or the original owners.
It absolutely does. I mean, we required 1515 Radio Court to do that. You know, there's not sidewalks on either side, and the new owner, if we ever form an LID down the street, is not going to be able to object to the LID and going to have to pay his fair share of the local improvement district.
On the subdivision side, once you get to our four lot, then up to that four lot standard, I think you can see some of the older subdivisions in the city, but even that's where the developer would build out the road with sidewalks and all the utilities, stormwater as well, up to city standards as a new subdivision. You would see the road built to city standards. It's more, the one-off smaller development where you see that petition. And I will go kind of to the next section where there's some text line edits, and that's in access. So here is, we've talked about this a little bit before, but this is the private access easement or joint use driveway standards. So this is kind of what this is creating and fixing is we have a lot of lots that it may be long and skinny, and this gives the option, instead of creating a bunch of flag lots, that's where you kind of have the pole and then the main lot. Rather than doing that, you kind of have a way to have an access easement, and then at the point of the road, you only have one driveway versus a bunch of driveways and flag lots. So this is kind of creating those standards to where you could have a joint use driveway and private access easement. And there's really specific standards that would have to be followed. So kind of one thing too here is it would have to be kind of, I'm going to run through each of these, infeasible due to the parcel shape, terrain, or location of existing structures, unnecessary to provide for future development of an adjoining property. So I think that's key here is this access easement would not be allowed if it's a connection point of a road. So if it's kind of that next parcel to be developed, then that road would need to not be a private access easement, but actually a city road to continue through for the flow of traffic. And then also for a subdivision, no more than 10% of the lots within a subdivision may be accessed by a private street or access easement. So that's just making sure that when you do a brand new subdivision, it's limited in terms of the number that have the private access easement. We don't want to create a brand new subdivision where you have a bunch of private access easements, but mostly they're using the new road that's created in that subdivision.
And I've seen that.
Yeah.
I've seen a developer come in and want to do that, want to do reciprocal easements on both sides of the road. So I think it's good.
I think, yeah, it kind of catches, makes it so you have the main road through the subdivision. And then in cases, if that lot's not perfectly shaped, I think it still allows for you to kind of fit in a couple extra lots where you can have that access easement, but it's limited to the 10%. Because not all.
Could you have multiple? In other words, if you had, it's large, you have 400 units, then 40 of them could be. So could you have four of them here, four of them there, spread out?
Yeah, they could be spread out. Because I think we're probably not going to run into any perfectly square lots left. And it's like, if you have an odd shaped lot, it makes sense to fit a few lots in it with the access easement.
And I was confused by when you get into width, since we're kind of there, 10% on number four down under that, it's no more than four dwelling units shall have their sole access to the easement.
Yeah.
So dwelling units and lots are absolutely are different, correct?
No, that's a good question. We use.
I mean, I just.
I actually think that's a good point. Because we say dwelling units, but I think it's more that actually that language would be better suited as lots. I think
that's kind of when I was reading. I think, wait a minute, is there a different? Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Because you might. We're kind of limiting to the max four lots that could be on that access easement because. Rather than units, because I think we could run into an issue if someone built an accessory dwelling unit. So now we have more than four units, but you have four lots.
And would a duplex be considered a dwelling unit or two dwelling?
That would be two dwelling units. I think that's an edit I'll make to that we change from dwelling units to lots instead. But that's a good catch. And then I also wanted to mention under number four, it also continues on to say easement serving more than two homes shall comply with the provisions of residential neighborhood street. And I think we can actually remove that language because we're capturing kind of the width requirements up above. And I don't want to imply that we do have standards for residential streets, but these access easements aren't going to have the sidewalks.
So you're suggest striking Roman numeral four then?
I think when it's easement serving more than two homes.
Easements.
Just that last
thing. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
There we go.
And we're capturing, because I think one of the concerns would be fire code, but later in the requirements, we're capturing international fire code and fire turnarounds too. So this, these access easements, you have those width requirements, and we're also, fire would always review those to make sure that, there's the turnaround, that they can, it could be a T turnaround or any sort of turnaround that meets fire code so that they can get fire trucks up and turn them around. So I think that's one of the concern that might come up with these, but it's captured within the code. And then there's
makes sense on that number four to actually leave it as dwelling units, because if, like you say, someone built each one, each lot builds two livable spaces, accessory dwelling unit, that's just doubled your amount of traffic on that one easement, right?
Yeah.
And that easement is supposed to be like a small thing where it's like kind of limited access. That's the point of this, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think it is limited to those lots, so you wouldn't see more than an extra ADU or a duplex, but I wouldn't want to prevent someone from being able to build an ADU, especially with the housing crisis challenges. I think it's it is more density, I think. But at the same time, we would still have catches like later on with like traffic in terms of fire lanes that they couldn't park in to block the lane. So I don't know if there's other thoughts on those.
The last part of that might kind of solve that, because if there's basically two homes on one lot, then it would need to comply with the neighborhood street. Because that's the part you're talking about taking out too.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, maybe it's just
leave it in.
Yeah, we could
leave it in other words, leave it as dwelling units or leave it as lots. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, you could change it to lots, right. But then I think you would need to leave the last part.
Right. Yeah.
Because if they're gonna put, you know, say the last lot at the end has an accessory dwelling unit, mm-hmm. then now you've just increased it to two homes. Or more than two homes, I guess.
Potentially more traffic going that.
No, okay.
I don't know.
That's good.
That makes sense. So we'll, I guess the final is we'll change up above the lots instead of dwellings. And then that last sentence with easements, we'll keep that as is. And then one thing that it's hopefully it's highlighted in yours as well, it's in the surface improvement, we added since the last version that was in the packet or other surface approved by Public Works and Fire to provide some additional flexibility potentially. So we say asphalt or concrete, then we're kind of leaving it up to later for Public Works and Fire if they agree to a different surface, which just giving more flexibility to the developer there. And then one thing that comes up with these private access easements is future maintenance. So what's covered here is there has to be a maintenance agreement that's signed by those property owners, and that would be something that would run with the land. So if that property's sold, that maintenance agreement would stay. So basically that's guaranteeing that it's maintained in the future, and it's really clear that it's not the city that's going to be maintaining that long term. It's those property owners for the access easement. And that would all get recorded as part of the process. And then also there would have to be an easement. I kind of skipped the two fire, the turnaround and then the fire lanes, because we covered that, but on the next page, under F, the private access easement. So that's also not only do you have the maintenance agreement, but you have an access easement so that all of those lots for the remaining time that they exist, which forever, they will have access.
And I like the fact that you put in that and the city isn't responsible for resolving any dispute.
Yeah, it's implied, but we want to make it clear. Any questions on that section? In the next section, so it's standards for lots and parcels. So these are kind of the standards for what parcels will look like. Kind of the main, there's a couple things we're doing here. At first, piece is just, it's an some additional language about the minimal lot area. It's pretty standard. And then one thing that's covered here is that access strip of a flag lot when there is a flag lot, that's not included in the calculation for lot area, because in reality, that little flag that you have, you're not going to be building anything on it. That's where the road is. So that's not included in the minimum lot area calculation. And that's something that wasn't clear in the old code, but this is making that clear. I don't expect, the hope is that now that we offer the option for joint use driveway easements, that we have more parcels going the route of a joint use driveway versus a flag lot option. And here under two, this next sentence, lots utilizing a joint use driveway that meets the standards, and it refers back to the joint use driveway standards, are exempt from this standard. So this is the frontage standard for ingress and egress. And since there's a joint use driveway, those back, say there's this frontage, there's the road here, and this is the first lot, these back two lots won't have frontage on the street, but they'll have access through the access agreement. So it's exempting them from the frontage standard. Since they still have the ability to access the road, they just don't have the direct frontage, essentially. Here's a clarification on number three here, lot sidelines. We added, instead of just street line, public street, private street, or private access easement for the perpendicular language. And then flag lots, you'll see there's new language here, and we also deleted out some flag lot language, because one thing, again, the hope is we have more of the joint use driveway access easements, but our flag lot standards did create some challenges, because you'll kind of see on that next page, we have that diagram for the minimum and max for a flag length. And what we've run into is there's sometimes where people want a smaller flag than 100 feet. And it's created some challenges with those really prescriptive existing standards between 100 and 150 feet. So what the new language, the access strip shall be, or the proposed new language, the access strip shall be a minimum of 20 feet in width for residential lots and 25 for non-residential. And the improved surface shall be a minimum of 14 feet. The access strip shall not be included in the lot area calculation. If the length of the access strip exceeds 150 feet, the parcel or lot shall include a turnaround for fire district requirements. So that's getting at it. I don't think there's any issues with a shorter flag, but once you get to that maximum, the main thing is we want to make sure that there's turnaround for fire access. And this is historically with those old flag lot standards, I think, where there have been people coming in for variances, and that just shows that it's not really meeting kind of the standards of what's needed for kind of development. But again, that joint use driveway access easement, I think, can solve some of those issues as well. And then here, we have this. Under six, we have this lot to width standard, depth to width ratio. And this is something where we're creating an exemption for commercial, industrial, or public use lots. And that the main reason for that is with really large, say we have a public park and it ends up being really long and skinny, and then now that park would not be meeting the lot to dip depth standard, because this standard is really trying to prevent long skinny lots from occurring. So that's that's something before, we didn't have that exemption for commercial or industrial lots. Any questions on that section, the standards for lots and parcels? And we're pulling a lot of this from kind of what we heard in our housing needs analysis and some of what we heard in those memos from consultants, trying to take what they said and incorporate it into the text edits. And also kind of what Arlene and I have learned over time, kind of where there's, when we talk to someone, kind of where there's hiccups and how we can think about, well, maybe that lot could have been developed if this standard was updated. So that's kind of where a lot of these code updates are coming from. So the next section here, it's kind of, these next two sections are connected. But this edit, so it'll say now, no plat or replat of a partition shall be reported or have any validity unless it has approval from the city. So this, before, it was Planning Commission. So what we heard in from the consultants is that partitions, and this is common, that they're approved by staff at the staff level, and then subdivisions are approved by the Planning Commission at the Planning Commission level. And that's what this is updating it. So partitions would go to the city, so city staff, and then subdivisions will still come to the Planning Commission for review and approval. There will be still a public process as part of partitions where neighbors are notified and can provide comments.
It says city, but it also says city manager. Is that correct?
Under A,
city manager. And that manager should be taken out. It should just be the city.
Yeah, I think opposite. I think I should say, that's a good point. I think I should say city manager in the text.
The city manager's one by ordinance that signs off on the plats.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, thank you for catching that. I think it should say city manager in text edit. So that's a good catch.
And then it should say, period, no subdivision.
Yeah, because are you on B?
Yeah.
Because it says, right. A said shall be recorded or have validity unless. And so I said, is approved by the Planning Commission.
Yep. I'll make that change. And kind of similar, we have to make a small change in Title 19 where it says instead of Type 3, it would be a Type 2 approval. The difference between a Type 2 and a Type 3 is Type 2, it's still a public approval process in that there's notice to neighbors and opportunity to provide.
I even noticed it was a good
one. Yeah, it doesn't show up very well. And the point and the goal of that change is that with the city manager approval, it can happen a little bit faster than going through the Planning Commission and that public process. And I don't think there would be any change in terms of the type of development that we see, because Planning Commission members kind of get to just create the code of what parcels will look like through the partition process. And smaller, less than three lots, two or three lots that are getting divided have a less of an impact versus a subdivision, where I think that still needs to come to Planning Commission members if we have, say, a larger 30-lot subdivision coming into the city, because there's additional review process as part of the larger subdivision. And I think it's very, very common that partitions are approved at the city manager level. And yeah, still that opportunity for neighbors to provide comments.
And the notification is 150 feet or 300 feet for the people that get that something's happening.
For partitions, Arlene, if you know,
our code, I believe, requires 300 feet.
Okay.
But we would want to double check the ORS because I believe the ORS allows us a smaller distance. It's just we've always had that 300 feet for all applications.
Okay, I thought I'd seen 150. I was thinking that would be kind of short.
What's
for...
in my head is the ORS allows us to go down to 150, but we did not choose that because of out of consistency of our other land use notice.
Okay, good. Yeah, because 300 seems more reasonable.
Yep. So I think that was a conscious decision many years ago to over notice than to really get down.
Yeah, and I think what we found too for some notices, if there's a large parcel right adjacent, you're only capturing on one side potentially one lot, so one neighbor. So it's good to have a slightly larger distance in terms of having there's no harm in inviting more comment. And overall, I would say partitions are the type of application I think Planning Commission has seen, but there's not really anyone that comes to the partition applications typically. I think with conditional uses, I think that's different. I think we have a little bit more common to have members of the public attend conditional use applications. Since I've been here in 2019, conditional uses, I think, are where we get our comments versus partitions, where it's more of a, does it meet the criteria? And yes, and let's get it approved so they can build. That's everything kind of.
Yeah, so it's type two.
Yeah, sorry that type two didn't show up.
You're gonna have to start using bright pink or something. Well, thank you. We got, I think, good things to work on. Get it, cleaned up. Discussion items, grant project updates, and the LCD and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I can kind of go through each of these one by one. And so the ELCD is the Department of Land Conservation and Development. That's our state land use agency. We received a grant, and this was specifically through a House Bill 3395 from the 2023 session. They were giving out grants to basically ensure compliance with state law. So part of it will be the first step in that grant is a code audit where DLCD staff will kind of be able to go through our code, both going back to both our residential sections. We might have some minor changes there, and then also our subdivision. So I think this can fold into some of the work that we're already doing, but making sure that we're, with all the new house bills that have been out there, that we're in compliance with all the new state rules. So that's kind of the first step of that. And I think it will flow well into kind of the work that's already occurring with this subdivision partition update. But we did get I think it was $10,000 to kind of support that effort. So it's helpful. And there'll be more detailed on kind of the specific updates out of those house bills at future meetings. And then for safe routes to school, kind of two components. We previously had submitted a grant and received a portion of it. And the portion that it was for sidewalks and for signage, the feedback signs on Sturtevant. We ended up not receiving money for the sidewalks, but we did receive money for the signage. Those signs have been ordered and the plan is actually received, and the plan is to install those this summer by the elementary school. So one on each side. So those signs, instead of kind of the current signs, you'll have signs that are actually providing feedback on speed. And we do have some potential budget left with that grant because those signs came in a little bit cheaper than expected. So we're exploring with ODOT where we could buy some additional signs. One of the ideas that was talked about with Public Works so far is on 10th Street there at East Slope. There's a cross, the East Slope Park, there's a crosswalk, and having some additional crosswalk signs there at, potentially with the wrap, the lights when you turn them on. So that was one of the ideas so far that we've tossed around, but we still have to get approval for that from ODOT. So we have to make sure that they're okay with it, but we're exploring that option since it came in under budget on the other portion.
You know, are there quite a few kids that, I mean, I don't know what goes on at the elementary school anymore, but do a lot of kids walk from elementary school and use that crosswalk there?
I don't, from when we did that planning grant a few years ago, kind of what I heard from the principal at the time was that they don't encourage a lot of kids to walk to school just because of the current safety conditions. But that sometimes I think there's, what did Brian say earlier today? I'm trying to think of that sometimes that East Slope crossing there at the park is sometimes frequently used. But yeah, in terms of encouraging kids, I don't think the school does, but they said that sometimes kids do walk to school still.
I think that spot would be great to have a sign like that. There's a lot of traffic there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trucks. Yeah, and with the bend kind of coming around, it'd be easier to see if there's the lights as part of it.
Yeah.
So, no, not guaranteeing anything, but that's kind of the idea that we want to pose to ODOT for a change.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And we also submitted a part one application again for the sidewalks on Sturt Event. So we're reapplying essentially to see if we can get that portion of the project. So it'd be from the elementary school down to 10th on the east side, new sidewalks is what that grant application is for. So that's in the process. We'll see kind of how they set it up. Is they give you a general idea of how you scored in part one versus other cities, and then you can decide if you want to submit part two. And there's a little bit more scoring that goes on, but you get a good idea kind of where you would fall in the scoring. So that's, I think we'll probably find out late April, early May, kind of where we fell. And then part two, I think, is due sometime in, I believe, May.
Paloma's sure got some funds, it looks like.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, that's a never ending.
It seems like that's never ending.
Yeah,
they come here, then they come here.
Ever since I lived in Oregon.
Yeah, it's gone on a long time. They ask how to do it, Main Street. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm not sure their funding source. I don't think it was Safe Routes to School, but yeah.
Speed trap money over the years.
No, it's supposed to be big trucks.
Yeah. I can't right now. There's only one lane through there.
Well, you wait till it opens to two lanes, and then you go around. Sorry, I didn't say that out loud.
No, it didn't say that out loud. We didn't hear it.
Yeah. We didn't hear it anyway.
We didn't hear it.
I think the city of Florence has made a lot of money over the tickets they wrote over the years there.
They probably have.
Oh, boy.
I watch.
I've never been through there without seeing somebody pulled over.
I come through all the time, though.
Yeah, I've had you guys cross through there every day. Sure, so
yeah.
They always make they've got to make a fun. they always make a fun.
Last grant is an Oregon Parks and Rec grant for a parks master plan. So previously there was a small grant received for Arcadia Park for construction, and that was the bathroom that's almost complete, and then some other improvements at Arcadia Park. But kind of in talking with the city manager, Doug, something we wanted to do was apply for a parks master plan. So that would, the master plan would do In the comp plan, we had a little small inventory of our existing parks, but this would kind of take a comprehensive look at all of the parks in the city, kind of what exists, what improvements are needed, and give like a ballpark cost estimate for some of those improvements. And there'll also be a public involvement component to that, to the planning grant. But ultimately what would come out of that is kind of the needs assessment, existing, looking at your existing parks across the city, and kind of what's needed, and then proposed potential improvements. And then also it would come with kind of ideas of how to fund future projects as well. It wouldn't lock the city into anything, but it is a good way to have a planning to spacing a master plan so that you, when we go out for other construction grants, we have things prioritized, which are based on a public process that occurred. Arcadia Park, I think that was is a super valuable construction grant that's occurring, but we didn't have necessarily a master plan to point to and say, this is, was based on public input. This was the top priority in the city. So this will be, have that public involvement and get that on paper. And that was actually one of the, in the comprehensive plan, one of our goals was to update the, it was either a goal or a policy, but it was to update the master plan. So kind of feeding, just to see kind of how that mass, that comp plan can feed into leading to other projects kind of later on.
Well, that'll be good. I've heard a lot, I don't talk to a lot of people, but about getting a community center together, you know, someplace where people could, you know, that's actually covered, you know, that could then be a venue that could be people talk about that here and there. You hear this place proposed and that place proposed. And yeah, so it'd be interesting to see if something like that could be woven into a parks plan.
Mm-hmm. Any word on Memorial Field bathrooms yet? Are we going to fix them up after the vandalism? Or?
Oh, yeah. No, we are. CIS is doing a restitution claim that'll run against the guy to pay it back.
But yeah, that, I got about eight of them going on. For
I know, but we've got a, I think it was insured for 52, and there's a rider that's full replacement value.
Summer Festival's coming up fast.
Once we get that money, I think we'll do contracts.
Was he homeless?
I think so.
I mean, I don't.
I believe so. That's what I was told.
I wondered if he was, I don't know, trying to stay warm or something, and the fire got away. I mean, or did he do it up? Weren't those locked? They were always locked before.
It's kind of hard.
The real super.
You're not.
The real super hard grainy, hard to see grainy video is him kind of putting something against the bottom, like he's stacking
like
brass pieces or something in front of the porta potty.
Oh.
And that's what he lit up. The porta potty went up and they had it set against the wall. And that's why it went into the,
yeah,
destroyed the bathrooms.
They're concrete.
Pretty well, they're on that concrete base. There's wood, but
yeah, but the walls are concrete and the rafters are
I'd like to see them fix those up replace those, because for years with the festival we never could use them,
right?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
they didn't really work really,
right.
So it'd be nice to,
well, that's why the porta potty was there, because when they, I'll hold my comments to myself and just say factual information, but when they fixed up those porta potties, they got the bathrooms, they got the porta potty because the porta potty is ADA accessible. So I'll keep my comments to myself and you can draw your own conclusions.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad that they'll be replaced.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
No, about 4:45, I went, oh, shoot, I never called back Beth at CIS, who's going to do the restitution claim. So
something I need to do tomorrow.
Yeah.
Those are, I don't have any staff comments on this, Eileen, if you have anything.
Just a reminder, if you haven't already, I know several of you have, but the government ethics statement of economic interest will be due April 15th.
It looks different. I can't find a link to open up to the form.
Well, you have to.
Arlene can give you the phone number.
I'll call.
That's what I always do. The phone number was bad.
Because down below, when you log in, when you get in there, you have to go down below. It's a little different at the link. But I was able to do it today, and I was successful to change my email.
Oh, good.
Because I hadn't any notification because it was still going to the bank. So I got that changed today. So I was happy to get the reminder from you guys today.
Okay, well, I didn't know about the last I saw, they said over the weekend there had been a problem and this and that, and the original one. And I kept, tell me about it. But we have an old computer. I'll figure it out.
Yeah,
I would end up calling them anyways, but the number isn't good. So, yeah.
I'm done. I got it.
And the number would be good. Arlene has it. Okay, well, get it from her. Okay. Yeah, because I called that number and it wasn't in service.
Huh.
I thought, well, that's weird.
Yeah. I called Arlene. She was gone.
So I wish they'd just mail them like they used to.
Yeah, that would be good.
As long as it's postmarked by a certain time, right?
Yeah. No, it was easy. And I even had to make some adjustments because a couple things have changed since I'm not working.
Oh, okay.
And it worked out just
fine. Yeah, it's pretty easy once you get into it.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, any commissioner comments? No? Okay. Well, everybody have a good what's left of April, and we'll see you in May's
coming up.
May's coming up.
Soon.